Monday, August 9th, 2010. This is the Sales Playbook Podcast. I'm your host, Paul Castain from YourSalesPlaybook.com, and today we're going to be taking a field trip. We're actually going to be going to Salon de Castain to give those questions that you've been asking on your appointments a questioning makeover, and I bet you it's about time. Some of those questions you're asking might be just a tad tired, and definitely could use a little bit of a makeover. And really what it's all about, and you're going to find out by the end of today's podcast, it's really about asking a better question. So let's start our questioning makeover with me asking you a real quick question. Now, aside from obviously getting information, what are the benefits of asking a good question? Have you ever really stopped to think about it? I mean, most of us, right, we know that, well, we got to get information, but have you ever really stopped to think about all the benefits that you get when you ask a better question? Let me throw a couple at you. The first thing is that really by asking a better question, it allows us to navigate the conversation without being controlling or, worse yet, salesy. And then the other thing that it can do is that it can help you regain control. Let me give you a quick example. How many times do you go in on an appointment, right? And maybe the prospect starts talking about pricing. They want to get pricing from you, but you haven't built enough value yet. And at that point, it's going to become a crapshoot, whether either you're on with the pricing or you're off. So asking a question at that point can bring it back and give you back the control without you being this control freak, if you will. The second thing is that it really helps with your helps to get your prospect to the point where they have a realization instead of you pitching them. It's always better, and I can tell you from a training perspective, it's always better when somebody realizes something as opposed to you having to tell them it, right? I mean, one way they own it, the other way you're selling them. So I want you to think about that as well. Also, last week we talked about rapport and credibility. To me, in my opinion, asking a better question is a huge rapport builder. It's going to do wonders for your credibility. Every time I have a discussion on rapport and I ask people, what are some of the ways we can build rapport? No one ever lists asking a better question. So I want you to keep that in mind. Also, a good question drives someone inward. I want you to write that down. A good question drives someone inward. And that's exactly where we need to be to get to that emotional sale. Everybody always talks about how people buy emotionally and justify logically. Well, a good question is going to bring them inward toward that emotional sale. And what that's going to do, folks, is that's going to move the prospect away from sticking with the status quo or, like we always say, indifference. Next, good questions create an objection-resistant discussion. Notice how I didn't say objection-free. I don't know that we could ever make a guarantee that we're going to have an objection-free discussion, but we can certainly make it objection-resistant, which in turn is going to lead to more sales. So hopefully, I'm hoping right about now that you're saying, Castain, you are preaching to the choir, and we're all in agreement that we need to ask a better question, which brings us to a million-dollar question. How are we going to do that? How are we going to ask a better question? Really, in order to devise better questions, we need to really understand what we're questioning. And in order to do that, you have to be prepared, you ready for this, to mentally fire yourself from your industry. You need to mentally fire yourself from your industry. And then, when you get done giving yourself the pink slip, you need to rehire yourself in the world of your prospect. And we really need to think about the good, the bad, and the ugly. And right about now, I want to flag a major mistake that people make when they do a needs analysis, when they're throwing their questions at the prospect. We've all been taught to go for the pain points. Yeah, keep doing that. Keep going for the pain. You can make lots of sales by going for the pain. But don't be so obsessed with trying to discover pain that you don't also realize that there's opportunity that we want to help them embrace. And we're going to get to that in a minute too. So I want you to really, really think about it. And the best way to package this is I want you to think about the good, the bad, and the ugly. So now, if we're going to put ourselves or rehire ourselves in the prospect's world, if you were a buyer of your product or service, what would aggravate you, keep you up at night? Don't you love that question? What keeps you up at night? What would keep you up at night? What would get under your skin? What would just completely piss you off? about either the process or being a buyer or being in that situation. So let me throw a couple of things at you to kind of prompt your thinking. So one of the things that, again, if I were in the shoes of a buyer, well, things like deadlines, man. How crazy are deadlines? Having to deal with that. Always needing things yesterday. Things like quality. Dealing with multiple vendors. Try doing that little balancing act, right? Your internal customers. Communication. Surprise costs. Everybody's favorite, right? Don't you love surprise costs? Now, I hate to say this next one, but it's true. But I might hate dealing with certain salespeople. Some salespeople would aggravate the heck out of me. And then also this whole business right now of doing more with less. Everybody's cutting back. So, I mean, it's safe to say your buyer or your decision maker, if you will, might be doing the job of two and three other people. So those are some of the things that would aggravate me. I want you to really think about your world. Those are some generic things. There's got to be some specific things in your world, or better yet, in the prospect's world. But that's the negative side. That's the bad and the ugly. I told you that we have to focus also on opportunity. So there's some cool things that every business, I don't care what industry they're in, every business needs certain things, like more sales, better market share, happy customers, shareholders, and employees. How about lower turnover? Streamline efficiencies, quicker to market turn times. So, and again, there's more, right? We can go on and on about either the things that would aggravate you or the things that you would want. And of course, you want to think about the things, obviously, that your product or service can speak to, that you can help them embrace through your product or service. So once you've identified the good things along with the bad and the ugly that we mentioned before, you need to understand something. At this point, you have only scratched the surface. And this is where so many salespeople really fail, and they miss it, and they don't get it, because they stop at the surface. And what I mean by that is that they might ask a question, and they might find out, the prospect might say, hey, you know, part of the reason why you're here today is because we've been having some communication issues with our vendor. And many salespeople, you think I'm making this up, it is the truth. Many salespeople at that point will then start spewing information about how cool they are at communication. Or let's just say they said it's a quality issue. They'll start talking about their quality control. Now, at that point, again, you're involved in a crapshoot. Either you're going to hit it dead on, or chances are you're going to miss it because you didn't dig deeper. So I want you to think about that a little bit, and you're certainly not going to be as effective. Now, I want you to remember something. A sale is rarely made at the surface level. You are still at the surface, so you need to dig below the surface, and let me explain it to you. Let's just say, again, that you found out through asking a good question that they've been having poor communication and they decided it's time to look around. That happens all the time, right? So it's not just about the poor communication. Poor communication is never just about the poor communication. It's all about the residual effects of that poor communication. So, for example, poor communication could also result in missed deadlines, right? It could also result in poor quality and quality issues. It could also result in additional costs. But we still aren't digging deep enough. It goes deeper still. We need to understand things almost at a ridiculous level. And, you know, if you were to take it even further along, it's possible that poor communication could also make me look bad to my boss. It could mean that because of that poor communication with the vendor, that I end up by missing my bonus. It might keep me working later in the office because I've got to put out fires now because of it. And as I often joke around, right, when we have a bad day at the office, we never bring that home, right? Of course we bring it home. So now you might end up by having problems at home as a result of that. And it could help me to lose my credibility, and ultimately, it could have me lose my job. So I want you to think about those things, and I want you to think about not only the things that would keep you up at night and the things you would want to embrace, but think about residual effects of those things, positive and negative, if you had those things or if you didn't have those things, and certainly you would help them to make some of those things go away. Now, I have a suggestion for you. If you really want to understand the residual effects of these things. You're going to take the time, and it's never a good time, by the way, because we always have a million things going on, to really outline these things and think about them. If you happen to know somebody that's in this kind of a role, talk to them about it. Get some insight from them. Some of your customers, when you're talking with them, try to find out some of these things, because it could be duplicated at another account. And these are the things that people usually miss. Now, I have another suggestion for you. When you start devising questions that speak to these areas that we've identified, what you want to do is you want to memorize them by topic. And what I mean by that, before we use the example of communication, but perhaps you come up with a question for quality, or you come up with a question to see if there's any surprise costs their vendors are throwing at them. You want to memorize it by topic. And the reason why is that conversations that you have on a sales call will rarely flow in the same order as your needs analysis. And what will happen is that somebody will give you an answer, and you'll find all of a sudden that their answer really now, all of a sudden it was quality, now it's speaking to poor communication, or it might be speaking to deadline issues or whatever. So if you have the question memorized by topic, you can shift gears seamlessly. And that's a real important thing, and a huge thing with a needs analysis and asking questions is that we execute on it seamlessly, and we don't make it sound like an interrogation, and we don't make it look like, well, I got to look up the question. So you're going to want to go about it that way. So there's some other things that I want you to think about too. And it's really the last thing about good questions. You can also get very specific in coming up with questions, and it really goes back to your meticulous pre-call planning. So if I have an appointment with the ABC company, right, I'm going to do some research. There's going to be things I find out on Google. There's going to be some things that I find out on their website. There's going to be things that I find out in the local newspapers and so on, and the trade journals and everything. So what you're going to want to do is come up with some questions based on that specific research. And what's good about that? It's a great way, again, coming back to that rapport thing, of building rapport and credibility, because you're demonstrating the fact that you're not just another person trying to sell them, that you're a professional and you've taken the time to research their world. And also, too, with that good research, you can then ask questions that might help you leverage what they call a trigger event. So I want you to think about that. Now, I did promise a questioning makeover. So now that you've hopefully identified all the things that would keep you up at night, all the things that would be opportunities that you would want to embrace, you've come up with some questions, hopefully put them by topic, memorize them by topic. Now we got to give the makeover, right? We got to give them some new clothes. So I want to offer you two types of questions that you need to be asking regularly. And this will help you to be more effective, and it's going to help you break up the questions that you ask. Because again, you never want to be predictable, you never want to be salesy, and you want to keep it fresh and exciting. Even from your perspective, I think it's very, very important. So the first type of question I want to offer you is called the experiential question. Now, the reason why I call it the experiential question is because these are questions designed to have your prospect or your client take you through an experience that, again, either has happened already to them or even something that hasn't happened yet. And we'll get to that in a second. But let me tell you why I think an experiential question is by far one of the most deadliest types of questions that you could ask. I mean, if you want to be armed and dangerous, and if you want to bring in more sales, you need to ask more experiential questions, hands down. Here's my reason for it. I want you to think about a time when you told somebody a story about something that pissed you off. Now, as you're telling the story about this thing that pissed you off, what happened? Gold star if you said, I got pissed off all over again. So what this does is that it brings that prospect back to that point where they were aggravated. And like we said, where the things that keep them up at night and get, you know, that really annoys them, why not bring them back to that emotional state? It moves them away from indifference. It moves them away from sticking with the status quo. And it makes your offering more valuable because we've emotionally charged them. Now, experiential questions usually begin with things like, tell me about a time when. Can you give me an example of? please share with me. Again, could you detail the specifics of things like that? But I have two key points about experiential questions that I want you to think about. The first thing is that, again, we mentioned it earlier in the discussion, experiential questions can also be used to get someone to imagine or experience something mentally, if you will, positive or negative, that hasn't happened yet. And I'll give you an example of something negative, and you've heard me use it before because it's my favorite example in the world because it's so damn effective. Think about the insurance industry. They are famous for asking a question to get you to think into the future about how your family would get by in your absence. That's designed to get you to have that aha that you need to get coverage. So again, an experiential question could be something that hasn't happened that could happen. Again, positive or negative. And my final tip with an experiential question, and it's like anything else that you do in sales, don't overdo it. Please do not overdo an experiential question, because you'll find that it's going to start sounding like a job interview, and it's just not going to sound too good. It's going to sound like an interrogation. So don't overdo it. Use it in there to break up your questions, again, so you don't sound predictable or salesy. And also, when you see that maybe you've hit a hot button, why not get them to relate an actual experience? And you'll find, if you really pay attention to it, that, again, it gets them emotionally charged up enough that the discussion takes on a higher degree of impact. At least that's been my experience. Now, there's another type of question that I really think that could turn out to be your best friend, and it's called a continuation question. A continuation question is a question that is designed to get the prospect or the client to continue or expand upon a thought. And the reason why I say it's your best friend is that all of us have done this. I mean, how many times have we asked a question and we know based on their answer that we've got the cure, we're ready to do it, and we almost rush the process? Every one of us have been there, and to tell you the truth, as professional as I'd like to think I am, as good as I'd like to think I am, I still have to resist that urge to just now want to fix it, right? Especially if you're enthusiastic about what you do for a living, you want to fix it. But a continuation question forces you to step back and take a deep breath, forces you back into listening mode. That's where you want to be as a sales professional. You want to be listening. And I guarantee it's like that old Dale Carnegie thing, that they're going to think you're an awesome conversationalist if you could get them talking. And again, that's where you can find the hot buttons to advance the sale. So let me give you some examples of continuation questions. The first one that you could say is, tell me more. You could also say to them, can you share an example with me? How so? Why? That's a very powerful question. Why? Silence can be really good, and I have a word of warning. Silence is a wonderful thing if you use it properly. It could also demonstrate confidence. It takes a lot of confidence just to shut up and let them continue. And what you'll find with silence is that most human beings have this nervous need to fill silence. And more often than not, it's usually the sales rep that's filling the silence. So if you can learn to be silent, you'll find that people will fill that silence. And many times out of nervousness, they might tell you something and give you complete disclosure on something that they might not have talked about. But here's the word of warning. If you use silence too much, or if you wait too long, I really think people are going to like pat you on the head and think like, you know, you're Rain Man or something like that. So you got to be really, really careful of it. Use it as a tool, but don't overuse it. And then there's something called a mirror question. And you've probably heard this one a million times. Again, I would not overuse this one. But again, to break up your questions, let me give you an example. Let's just say someone tells you that they've been having challenges with their vendor. Now, what you're going to do is sort of repeat that back to them and in the form of a question. So somebody says to me, Paul, we've been having challenges with our vendor. And what I'm going to say to get them to continue is I'm going to say, challenges with your vendor. Now, again, if you overdo this, you are going to sound like a freaking parrot. So again, all these little tips that I'm giving you, they have a time and a place. Your best strategy is to mix it up. And I don't want to name the organization on on TV that does this. But I think that they all went for the same questioning training or something, because every time they would interview somebody, it was hilarious because they were using these mirror questions, and then what they would do with their tonality is they would drop their voice to sort of get the person they were interviewing to get all, you know, teary-eyed and stuff. And it was ridiculous. I mean, if they were interviewing me, I'd probably ask them if there was a freaking echo in the room or something, because it got to be pretty lame after a while. So that is an example of how you can do it. Now, I have some final suggestions for you, and then I'm going to give you some homework to think about. Number one, you really want to keep your meetings from becoming this ridiculous guessing game. And I've talked about this before. In fact, I talked about this on a podcast probably about 2 months ago. You really need to start your meetings off by asking the following question. And again, I'm assuming that your meeting is a result of you calling them or you reaching out to them or maybe some networking that you were doing. And what I generally do is I'll say, granted I called you, what prompted you to take today's meeting? And my reason for asking that question, let me repeat it one more time. Granted I called you, what prompted you to take today's meeting? I have never had anybody get annoyed with me for asking that question. I've had some people answer it very, very generally, and that because I don't have the trust yet with them, but it is an important question to ask, because why in the heck am I going to go through, in my industry especially, I've got one of a million reasons why they might be seeing me. Why do I want to start asking them quality questions when deep in their heart, it's a communication problem or a surprise cost question or none of the above? It's about embracing new opportunities. They need to have a better image in the marketplace. So again, this helps me just narrow the playing field. And I think that is so important. And you'll find that people with as busy as they are, they will respect you for respecting their time. So keep that in mind. Phrase it in the way that fits your style best. And then at the end of your meeting, get in the habit of asking, what else? As in, what else should we discuss that we didn't get to today? What else, as in, what else should we discuss that we didn't get to today? There is a reason and a rhyme and a reason to that. I want you to think about going shopping. How many times do you set out to buy one thing and you see other things? Or perhaps the salesperson maybe asked you a question that got you thinking in a different direction. Maybe the salesperson said something that moved you in another direction. And with you asking questions and continuing to direct the flow of the meeting, you might have a tremendous opportunity that, again, maybe they're bashful and they haven't brought up yet. Plus, by asking this question at the end, you are staying true to something that I think is just so important in sales today. We want to keep it collaborative. I am not about, I'm going to close you and I'm going to manipulate you. I'm really about us arriving to the point of a partnership together. And I think that makes a huge difference. And just to illustrate by way of just a corny example, I think it really provides a proper courtship before a marriage. And I want you to really, really think about that. So think about those things. Now, let me throw the homework at you. I promised you some homework, right? Everybody's favorite thing. So just to kind of recap, I want you to fire yourself mentally from your industry, rehire yourself in their industry, and I want you to think about the good, the bad, and the ugly. Don't just think about the things that would aggravate you. You need to think about the opportunities that would exist for a business. Again, things like more sales and happy customers and maybe, you know, lower employee turnover and things like that. So I want you to think about that. Then from there, I want you to understand that you are only at the surface and you need to go below the surface again and think about the residual effects. Again, if we're talking about communication, what could that mean? Is it just about bad communication? Well, it could lead to me having a problem with the boss, me getting home later, personal problems, loss of a bonus. Think about those things. I want you then to devise a list of questions, memorize it by topic. The reason for that, again, is because a discussion will rarely follow the same order as your needs analysis. Again, when the conversation shifts gears, You can shift gears with it because you'll know the topic that their answer speaks to. That's very, very important. And it'll keep a very good flow of information and keep it at a discussion instead of an interrogation. Man, that's a huge, huge difference right there. I want you to sprinkle in some of those experiential questions. Remember, an experiential question is a question designed to get them to relate either a past experience that they've had that was unpleasant, or have them imagine an experience in the future that is either unpleasant or something that could just be a home run for their team if you were able to do business with them. Also, you want to start asking more continuation questions. Keep your meetings from becoming a guessing game by starting the meeting off with, granted, I called you. What prompted you to take this meeting today? Get in the habit at the end of the meeting of asking what else, as in what else should we cover that we didn't get to today? With that, sales managers, I want to throw a little tip at you. You can create a killer sales meeting around this topic by following the steps that I've outlined here. I would highly recommend it because when I look at sales teams and when I work with sales professionals, this I would say is at the top of the list of needs improvement. We have to work on those questions. We have to give them that questioning makeover. So with that, you have a lot of work to do and a lot of food for thought. I'm Paul Castain with YourSalesPlaybook.com, inviting you to stop by our blog, visit our LinkedIn group, Sales Playbook, and I am wishing you an awesome week ahead. Take care.